Life Management Science Labs would like to acknowledge that we live and produce this podcast on the traditional lands of the Wurundjeri people. We'd also like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the lands of our listeners and our international colleagues. We'd like to pay our respects to their elders, past, present, and emerging. Hi, and welcome to Reloscope, the Relationship Science Insights podcast produced by LMSL, the Life Management Science Labs. We are champions of life management science, providing structured insights informed by science and inspired by practice on key aspects of conscious living. Each week, we bring you scientific and practical insights on each element with the expert knowledge of professionals in the field. I'm Marie Stella, your host from Melbourne, Australia. Let's start the show.
Welcome back to the show. The tale of a loveless long-term relationship is one that's old as time. It's a situation you'd hear of very often, and at some point you've got to wonder why. So today we're speaking to psychologist Brooke Sherry to discuss what makes a relationship last, but also fulfilling. Hi, Brooke. It's great to have you on the show. How are you going today?
Thanks for having me on the show today. I'm going really well. How are you?
Fine, thank you. Thank you so much for asking. Could you tell us a bit more about yourself and how you got into this?
Yeah, for sure. So my background I used to be a paramedic. Mm-hmm. And when I was a paramedic, I was exposed to a lot of trauma in the homes of just society. And so that sparked something in me where I wanted to work deeper with the community in a way that I could actually help, as opposed to being a paramedic. So I went back and I did 4 more degrees in psychology, and then I did a lot of work with tribal, different tribes, some in South America, and I learned from the traditional medicine women there. And I've also done a lot of professional dance, so I intertwined all of that together with somatics, trauma, psychology, paramedics, and then everything I learned from within the tribal section. And so now I'm working as a psychologist doing that.
That's amazing. That's such an inspiring story. And I really like how you intertwined all of your different skills and your passions. It really is what makes you unique. But before we get started, we'd like to get to know you a bit better. This is Have You Met Brooke? So the first thing I really like to know is, what do you like to do in your spare time?
Well, in my spare time, I really love dancing's my absolute passion. So I love dancing. I love yoga. My absolute passion will be dancing and writing. So I just...
Ooh, what do you write?
Well, I love writing about learning through my life lessons and just extracting those sort of lessons. Also witnessing patterns within humanity. And I like to write about those patterns which I witness and then exploring them on an energetic level in great depth through meditation.
Mm-hmm. That sounds really, really interesting. I love writing as well, and it can be such a cathartic experience. And especially when you give yourself a little challenge with every exercise that you do, for example, I'm going to make this rhyme and certain things like that, really makes you step out of your comfort zone and it can be even more fulfilling. So do you read any books?
Yeah, I read books, but I read books in a little bit of an unconventional way. For myself personally, I feel like when I was younger, I used to sort of read a book from start to finish. Whereas now I'll have my own little library, and then I'll just be like, okay, what's calling me? And then I'll pull out a book, and then I'll open the book and I'll read a chapter wherever I land. And so sometimes I'm reading about 10 books at once. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's really, really interesting. I've never heard of anyone reading books like that. And honestly, it's something I might try out, because as an adult, I find that I just do not have the time or the attention span for reading a whole book at one go. And also, I've always had trouble just reading in general. I think it was really easy for me to read when I was in I don't know, when I was 7 or 8 years old or something like that. But at some point, I just completely could not read anymore. Like, I can, like, technically, I'm able to read. I just find it very difficult to pay attention. I just don't have the attention span anymore. Maybe that's because of technology, but I don't believe it is, because that was, like, before the age of, like, smartphones and stuff, where I just kind of fell off the wagon with reading. But enough about me.
Your point is very valid, and you know, I think a lot of people have that issue, and I feel as human beings, naturally we do lose like engagement with something. Like, if even that pressure of like, you need to read this from start to finish, it's a bit, to me it's a bit hardcore, so I just like, oh, like, just dabble in that when you want to and just enjoy it out.
Hardcore is such a good way of putting it. It sounds like, from an outsider who doesn't have this issue, it sounds so dramatic, but it's so true. That's so hardcore, you know? What about films? Do you enjoy any films? Do you watch films the same way you would read books?
Well, to be honest, like, talking about films and like TV, I haven't watched TV for about 17 years.
Wow.
Yeah. So I've seen one Netflix, just one session of a little Netflix. Mm-hmm. But I haven't watched TV, Netflix.
It's just really funny how you referred to it as like, I've just watched one session of like Netflix, which is not how people who watch Netflix would put it. And that's very telling of like how in tune you are with Netflix.
Sorry.
That's completely fine, and I love that. But what about podcasts? Are there any that you listen to?
Yeah, I do love podcasts, but to be honest, I actually like to, in like the little app, you can just, whatever topic is hot for me at the moment, like at that moment in time, I'll just put that in the search, little search part, and then lots of podcasts will come up, and then I'll jump between. And I feel personally, as I develop as a human, podcasts that would resonate with me at one moment in time, they don't resonate. Mm-hmm. Like, so then I'm constantly shifting with Does that make sense?
Yeah, I do get that as well. Like, there are several podcasts that I would still recommend to people now. I just don't really, it just doesn't really resonate with me. Not that I disagree with it, but I just don't feel it calling out to my name anymore. It's just not screaming. I still think it's a great podcast, and I used to listen to them a lot, and I still would recommend it now. I just don't really feel like reaching out for it. It's like having an eyeshadow palette that you used a lot at one point in time, and you still treasure it now, but it just doesn't call out to you anymore.
Yeah, like that. Yeah. And I feel now where I'm at in my own development, instead of like using something as like, oh, this is the answer, or in that sort of way, or like everything they say is 100%, you know, I instead like to use podcasts and just like going between whichever channels more in the way of like sparking an idea within me or a topic, and then I'll sit with that and I'll be more so be like, oh, what part of that resonated? What part didn't resonate? So I'm really into like self-inquiry, and that's a lot of the things that I do with my clients, where rather than just listen, whatever I say, rather than just listen to that and take that 100% on board, I'll say something and let's see if it resonates. Mm-hmm. It's about like re-empowering yourself, but through listening to podcasts.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And it's also like an outlet for you to think a bit more critically as well, instead of just absorbing everything and kind of agreeing with everything that's said. So that's a really interesting way of listening to podcasts, and I really like it. Now, for our last question in the Have You Met section, who do you look up to the most in life?
I feel like it's really shifted a lot for me. Mm-hmm. I feel like or I used to pedestal people, whereas I actually learned that everyone is actually human, and everyone has like their different flaws and stuff. Whereas now for like inspiration, sort of what I look up to is it's more to do with spirituality. You know? So it's not so much like a person. Does that make sense?
I think it does. I'm not sure about spirituality. I don't think I exercise that a lot, but I do resonate with the thing, with what you said about in the past having put people on the pedestal and shifting things around, having different role models in life, and now not doing that as much. I think I have experienced that as well. I'm just not sure about the spirituality part, but tell me more about that.
Yeah, so to do with the pedestaling stuff, I felt that when I was younger, like I looked up to certain people, especially in like the personal development industry. And then a couple of times, you know, when I had attended seminars or events or were got close to people that were close to them, I sort of had the image like fractured. And I was like, yeah, and at the time I was really upset. But then I was like, oh, like they're just sort of painting like a sort of picture. So it sort of broke that facade for me, which was a really healthy facade to break, because I was like, oh, okay. And it helped me, yeah, see people, as opposed to like this person's perfect. And then now I'll help you understand the spiritual element a little bit more. Now I feel for myself personally, since I have done, you know, been amongst tribes and been connected to that element, it's not so much about like a person that is an inspiration. It's more about like connecting to something outside of yourself. You know, whether it's like connecting to humanity, so I get inspiration from that. And actually, come to think of it, I get inspiration through hearing people's stories. And just like, there's no one person that I'm inspired by, but I'm inspired by different people like throughout my day, whether it's their story or something they've gone through or something I've witnessed. And that is where I get my inspiration.
Yeah, I think I understand where you're coming from. I feel like I probably do that with philosophy. I really like learning a bit about the different philosophers and the different ideas, and not really subscribing to like one particular set of rules on life or guidelines on life, but kind of piecing things together a little bit and kind of taking bits and pieces from like a bit from here, a bit from there, wherever it makes sense for my life. And also being inspired by people's kindness is something I think I do a lot, especially if they're strangers and they're just showing you like unconditional kindness. That's the biggest form of inspiration for me. Yeah, so I think I do understand a little bit of what you're trying to say, but I'm not sure if I'm getting this right at all.
No, you're spot on. There's no one thing that I'm like, okay, I'm gonna like Google this person because they constantly inspire me. Yeah, I feel like I just get it from like little places, like whether it's like on the streets, whether it's hearing something, whether it's hearing someone's story, whether it's seeing, you know, someone dance in such a beautiful way. And I'm like, wow. So I feel like as you mature, yeah, I think that's what happens. It's not just one thing you constantly go to.
That's a really good and real answer. Thank you so much, Brooke. I feel like we've gotten to know you a bit better. So now we'll move on to the interview section. And the first question that we like to ask all our guests to kind of act as like a baseline, because everyone's opinion and perspective on this is a bit different. What, in your opinion, what is a relationship and how would you describe a relationship?
Okay. Thank you for your question, Marie. Yeah. So to me, I see a relationship as two people coming together and share it. Like there's one person, another person, and then there's the relationship. So in my opinion, I feel that a relationship can only really work in a healthy way when an individual is able to stand on their own, both individuals can stand on their own, and then they come together And that is how I view a relationship.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So do you think a relationship still holds the same meaning, structure, and importance as decades ago?
I feel that based on my awareness of intergenerational trauma, I feel that in the past, like decades ago, I feel that a lot of relationships, it's quite complex, but I feel like there's a lot of relationships were based on basically like a trauma bond. Mm-hmm. Whereas now I feel that times are shifting and I feel that it seems that a lot more people are becoming conscious of old patterns. And we're shifting into a space of more trying to get there with healthier relationships and being able to communicate. So to answer your question, I definitely feel that relationships have shifted nowadays compared to decades ago.
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel like it might depend slightly on geographical location, but by and large, globally, we do see a shift, especially if we're talking about over a few decades, maybe not over like one decade, but a few decades, definitely there's been a huge difference. But how would you define relationship satisfaction? And what does it mean to experience satisfaction in a relationship?
Okay, so good question, Marie. So when I think of relationship satisfaction, I feel that that is both individuals within the relationship having their needs met to some extent. And when I'm talking about needs, I feel more it's around like being able to bring up what you need to within the space in a healthy way and having that met with kindness, love, and warmth. And I feel that that is one element that can bring relationship satisfaction, and that's sort of the foundation. And then outside of that, you know, you can have all your adventures and stuff, but I feel that that is the foundation, and that foundation needs to be quite solid because a relationship is a safe space.
So what does a relationship without that satisfaction look like?
So good question, Marie. I feel that a relationship without that level of satisfaction can be quite toxic in nature. And I feel that often, you know, we can have two individuals in a relationship that aren't being met with in a safe space. And therefore that can bring up a lot of feelings of, you know, not being heard, not being seen, not being validated, which can then bring on, you know, a lot of feelings like being scared of the relationship, being scared to speak up, relationship anxiousness. And yeah, so I feel like often that can lead to, at the core of it, you know, like quite unhappiness in two individuals, and they're just like coexisting together, but they're actually both lonely because they're not connected.
So that does kind of sound like how infidelity sometimes happens, and not that it is something that I condone at all, but if it's because of such like loneliness in a relationship, it makes sense as to why this might happen. So is there any way to kind of prevent this, not really prevent, but kind of like nip it in the bud? And how do you, what kind of signs can you look out for in when determining whether you're in a relationship that has enough satisfaction?
Well, okay, so personally, based on my awareness, self-work is the most important work you can do. You know, if you're working on a relationship, self-work, you need to work on yourself, yeah? Because often due to intergenerational trauma, a lot of individuals will be in a relationship, but they won't even realize that the relationship may be unhealthy because it can be a repetition of their childhood environment or of one of their parental figures, right? So for an individual, you know, everyone needs to, I believe it's really important for everyone to work on themselves, you know, and when you work on yourself, you know, you actually start to develop skills like being able to articulate your internal experience And when we're connected to ourselves and connected to our internal experience, we're actually able to articulate what's going on within the moment. So if one of your needs is not being met, or you'd like it met a certain way, or you don't like something your partner's doing, you're able to go in the moment, hey, babe, I'm just letting you know the way you're talking to me, that's really hurting me right now. Mm-hmm. But that can only happen through self-work. Right?
Yeah, and you've got to learn how to articulate your needs, which can be a very difficult thing to do for people who haven't learned how to work on themselves. I know that I struggled with it a lot before I started doing any work on myself. Are there any differences in how the various genders might perceive and pursue relationship satisfaction, or are they more or less about the same?
So, Marie, I feel like both men and women, you know, are very different on so many levels. However, I feel at the core, we all universally, every human, doesn't matter what country you're from, what sex you are, which religion, anything, we all have basic needs, which is, you know, basically the bottom of Maslow's hierarchy, which is, you know, safety, you know, love, warmth, being acknowledged, being witnessed, being accepted. And I feel like those are universal across men and women. Yeah.
So what are some practices or activities that couples can do if they want to maintain or regain satisfaction in their relationship, especially hetero couples, as we were just talking about the different genders?
Mm-hmm. Well, I feel what a really good practice would be, especially if you're talking about like regaining satisfaction, because that question says to me that they've had satisfaction, lost satisfaction, they want to regain it. So that shows me that there's an element where individuals' needs aren't being met within the relationship. So I feel bringing in something, a practice that incorporates a safe space, generally around communication. So I know some couples where they will create like a safe space, whether it's like a meeting, like once every 2 weeks or once every 3 weeks. And it's like, okay, let's have a look at our relationship. And each person has a chance to be able to express themselves freely, mm-hmm. with the other person just witnessing them and listening, mm-hmm. and then sopping over, yeah? And some questions that they can ask is, what do we like about our relationship? What don't we like about our relationship? Do I feel that I'm, you know, what are my expectations within the relationship? What are our, you know, creating even a thing around like your values, you know, and what do we want to do more of? What ways do we want to explore together? And I feel that this gives people like an opportunity to actually learn about each other, mm-hmm. because often this safe space can bring in some dialogue around like whether someone has like fantasies, whether someone wants to try something like shibari, you know, whether someone's needs aren't getting met, whether it's around, you know, wanting to be more social or wanting to try something. And I feel within that practice, what it also does is it actually sends out a message that we actually value our relationship and we're actually working on it, because what we're doing, it's just like a business, right? In a business, you know, if something's not, you need to keep reviewing it. And it's like, okay, is what's working, what's not working, what can we do better? You know, and I think often people enter a relationship and they actually forget, like, you actually got to keep watering the garden. It doesn't just, you know, just flourish without the nutrients.
Yeah, you've got to take the time to deliberately check in with each other, and what your thoughts are on each other and the relationship. And you've got to take the time to nurture it, like just very much like you said, a garden. I was going to use a weird analogy, but I don't know much about gardening. I was going to use a gardening analogy and then I was like, hold up, I don't know how gardening works. I was like, if you want to be a good gardener and you want to grow a beautiful garden, you can't just water it, you've got to like sing to it too. but I don't know if that's how gardening works.
How?
Well, I don't, yeah. I guess you, sorry, yes.
Well, I was just going to say it's like the under the microscope when they put the water molecules. And have you seen this?
No.
Okay. So what happens is, I can't remember the guy right now. It's very famous. But one, there's water molecules that where there's been lots of negative words, negative things said, they're put under the microscope and the cells are completely denatured, like completely morphed, right? Whereas the cells where it's every day you're like, I love you, like saying all this to the water, what happens is it has like a perfect structure of the, I think it's like almost like the snowflake or something. And it's—
What?
Yeah. It's like, it's a super popular experiment, and it's just to highlight the differences between, you know, there's actually a massive impact if you have, you know, negative energy compared to pouring positive energy into even just a glass of water.
That's impeccable.
Yeah.
That's actually like mind-blowing to me. I don't know if this is mind-blowing to just me or if this, like, this is common general knowledge for everyone, but that is news to me, and I'm going to keep singing to my water.
Yes, and your relationship.
Yeah, sure, that too.
With yourself.
No, definitely with my relationship too. More to my relationship, of course. So apart from singing to your relationship, what advice would you give to individuals who may not quite be experiencing this relationship satisfaction but are hoping to achieve that? Do you think it's worth pursuing, or is that something they have to kind of decide on their own?
This is an interesting question, and just a little trigger warning, just for if people are in a difficult situation at the moment, the information I'm about to say may be a bit like, oof, like, so I just want to just put that out there. So when we look into trauma psychology, okay, one thing that we look at is why an individual is, for instance, we'll just need to use an example, okay? So let's say we're talking about a woman or a man, but I'm just going to say a woman for now, but I know it's all over, right? But let's just say we have a woman that is in like a violent relationship with a man, okay? And often people be like, oh my God, why doesn't she just leave him? Like, why is she still there? And it's actually a lot more complex than that, okay? So often the woman will be replicating, as I said earlier, the relationship she has from her childhood, okay? And this is an extreme example, by the way. But it goes from there to, yeah, okay, cool. So let's say the woman is like, oh, you know, maybe this guy can change, you know, maybe we'll work on communication, you know. And let's say she starts doing self-work and all of a sudden she's like, oh, this relationship really is not feeling good. Okay. But he keeps saying he's going to change. He keeps saying he's going to change. So I'm going to stick around because I think we can work through this. Okay. Now, when we look in the trauma research, what we often witness from these sort of experiences is that an individual is basically trying to get some formality of closure about her childhood. And it's that part of her that lived during that time. So often an individual, and that was just an extreme example, but, you know, it can be even just subtle, like you aren't meeting each other, yeah? But often an individual will keep on working at something. And I think that if we're constantly attached to this image that an individual is going to change, I think that is a warning sign that we sort of need to have some space and take stock and just get a bit more perspective, because an individual can only change if they actually really want to change, and it's got to come from within them. Okay. So if an individual is in that situation, not that situation, but the unsatisfied relationship situation, I feel that it's really important to, you know, even make some dot points around, you know, why you're not satisfied, you know, even seeking additional support, whether it's a relationship counselor, so that you can work on these things. And to be honest, like, if you're not satisfied, your partner's probably not satisfied, like, happy either and fulfilled. So Yeah, and then I think it's important to, you know, get like a perspective, and whether the relationship, you know, you can keep going down that path, or whether it's just time to, you know, go your separate ways.
I feel like the 5-year relationship I had as a teenager makes a lot more sense now, because you're just talking about how we often, when we're thinking like, oh, this person's going to change, we're kind of looking for closure in our childhood, and that makes a lot of sense. My ex of 5 years, he was very similar to my dad in the sense of like emotionally just kind of shut off, family kind of person, but emotionally still kind of shut off, and it's just weird. It's just weird how they're so similar, and I just kind of was hoping that he'd be a different person because that was what he was promising me. But that's a bit of an overshare. However, I feel like that's something that people, listeners, can learn from and benefit from. So I'm taking one for the team.
Thank you so much for like sharing such a personal story. And, you know, I think when we're talking about these topics, it's really important when people can actually relate to an experience and through personal sharing.
Yeah, so it's kind of like you aren't alone in this. It's something that other people go through as well. And I feel like having someone share their stories or their experiences that might resonate with you can make all the difference in, because when you're in a relationship like that or a situation like that, if you're not speaking to anyone who is sharing the same experience as you, it can feel very isolating. It can feel like you're the only one going through it. And having just one other person share that same experience as you, whether it's a friend or it's just someone random on a podcast, it can really make all the difference. So I try to like be as open as possible without sharing like too much, hoping that will work somehow, and it will reach someone who needs it. But back to
I think that, you know, everything you said there was just so beautifully said, and I want you to know that I've also had those similar experiences, and you know, they're some of the most, you know, complex sort of situations because you don't really understand what's going on. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so to anyone listening out there, you know, you're not alone. And Marie and I have both had those experiences.
Yeah, it's a lot more common than you might think. And I don't know why. Like, maybe it's just humans, we tend to gravitate towards these things. I don't know. You're the psychologist.
Well, Marie, based on my awareness, you know, this comes from a lot of, you know, intergenerational trauma, okay? And when I'm talking about intergenerational trauma, I'm not so much talking about like these huge traumas, but I'm just talking about like lack of communication within the home, you know, not checking in with, is everyone okay today? And all these patterns just keep getting handed down every generation, okay? They're just, boom, next generation, next generation, next generation. Okay, so they get handed down. So then now we're the daughters of our mothers and we're repeating the same patterns as our mother. You know, she got with our fathers and then we attracted someone who's similar to our father, mm-hmm. right? And now we are in a space where we are actually breaking those patterns, okay? But one key thing that I want to bring through, okay, this is from my own exploration, okay? But I actually feel on a deep level that the reason why we keep repeating these patterns and the reason why we repeat our mother's patterns is so that we can actually have compassion and understanding for why our mother chose our father.
That makes a lot of sense. It's kind of like a subconscious decision kind of thing.
Because think about it, just before you're talking about like, oh gosh, I don't know why I was in that like 5-year relationship, like I just wanted him to keep changing, and what that, the feeling of being stuck somewhere and totally enmeshed with another human, the pull and the polarity of that actually helps us understand why maybe our mother stayed with an alcoholic father, a father that wasn't present, a father that was always traveling, you know, because we repeat her footsteps just unconsciously because it's in our subconscious.
Mm-hmm.
And then, and often it's camouflage. So sometimes, you know, it could be, let's say dad wasn't home, like literally physically dad wasn't home, but then we attract someone where they're always like, they never have space to hear us. So it's just a replication, but in a different formality, right?
Yeah, completely, completely. And I feel like the moment I found someone who wasn't like my father and like actually emotionally available and present all the time, I kind of felt uncomfortable. Like it was nice, but there was this like discomfort in my stomach. Like, is this even real? Like, this can't be real at all. And it's very like, so how do people get past that? The part where it's, well, when you break out of that pattern, for example, like, well, when I feel like I'm kind of maybe breaking that pattern now, but every time it's like, oh, this person's actually emotionally available and not like my father, but it feels too good to be true. And it is kind of uncomfortable, even though it is nice and what I want. Sure. Does that make sense?
But is your specific question, Marie, around how do you break from constantly choosing your father?
So how do you overcome those familial patterns in order to choose a healthy partner?
So Marie, based on my awareness, in order to overcome those familiar patterns, it comes back down to self-work, okay? So it's basic. The first step is getting your emotional system online, getting your ability to articulate yourself properly. Then there's also a massive component of working with yourself in a way where you build the confidence within yourself and you basically dialogue with yourself to know that you know better.
Mm-hmm.
So getting online that intrinsic, I know that I deserve better than this and that life can be way better than this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's like doing that work first, and then whilst you're doing that, being able to articulate yourself within your current relationship, which may be like, hey, babe, like I really don't appreciate when you speak to me like that, or, you know, whatever it is. And then, you know, when that part comes up, like you spoke about with your five-year relationship, that's like, oh, hopefully they can change. It's basically educating that part that a person can only change if they want to change, and that we can't stay here till the cows come home waiting for change. Mm-hmm. You know, and it comes back to, hate to say it, but it comes back down to self-love, yeah? And it's like, well, you know, having the mentality around, well, I've sort of done this work, I'm doing this work, am I actually going to keep waiting for someone to like get to this level so that we can be healthy, or would I actually just like to meet someone at this level? And I always say, you know, when you think about your friends, you know, are you going to choose friends where you need to change them?
So apart from what you've mentioned previously, what are some of the challenges that couples might encounter when attempting to maintain satisfaction in their relationship?
Well, Marie, personally, I believe that when you're in a healthy relationship, whether, you know, it's a romantic in nature, well, especially romantic in nature, even in friendships too, but in romantic in nature, I don't really feel that, you know, if you have like the foundation set up, which is safe space, ability to communicate, you have, you know, even the tone of the space set up where it's like, okay, no one can scream, no one can just articulate from your truth. I don't actually feel that there should be a lot of challenges at all. I just feel that when like you're going along in a relationship and something happens and you're like, hey, I'm just letting you know something doesn't feel good right now. Okay, cool. Let's organize a safe space. Let's you articulate from your truth and then vice versa. And I feel that is like a healthy relationship.
Mm-hmm. That's a really good answer. Thank you so much for that. And I feel like it gives people some sort of clarity, because sometimes when you're in an unhealthy relationship, you question whether or not it's healthy, whether it's just, well, like maybe all relationships are like that. But that does give like that does give some kind of directness to it. Like in a healthy relationship, this is how it's meant to be. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, and just one thing that I want to bring up, just so that like I'm not painting that a relationship should be perfect, okay? So I think that, you know, let's say we're talking between us, Marie, and let's say one day I'm having a lot of stuff come up. I've been triggered in the outside at a work setting or something's happened and that's coming up in me and I'm like angry, and then I'm like, I don't want to be around you, you know? So let's say those things can come up, right? Where it comes back to the self-work where it's like, oh, I'm noticing in myself, I don't want to be around any people right now because I'm feeling like quite wild. So I feel that, you know, a relationship's not always going to look the same. And I feel like when you have the basics sorted, which is the foundation, also your values, and you're aligned in your values, such as respect, transparency, honesty, when that's all okay and going in alignment, I don't feel like there should be a lot of problems. Yeah. It doesn't mean that you always want to be like, you know, right next to the person, because that's not healthy either. Yeah. That's codependent, right?
That's a really good explanation for that. But finally, what are some resources, tools, or books that couples can consult for guidance on nurturing satisfaction in their relationship?
Well, personally, I feel like the most important tool across the board is inner child work and reparenting work. I feel like those two things are the most important. And if you get that under, like, you start doing that work with yourself and your partner starts doing that work with themselves, I feel like you're guaranteed to be able to shift into a like super, super beautiful relationship together. I just feel like every individual, you know, carries their stuff, and basically just to help individuals have a little bit of an understanding of the inner child stuff. It's like, imagine me all the way to when I was in my mother's womb, and I exist on every, like, let's just say me at every year, I exist, okay? And if I had stuff happen to me when I was like 5, 10, 15, I was actually too underdeveloped during that time to be able to, well, it was actually a coping mechanism, but I was unable to, I would not be able to express the truth of what was going on. So that got stored within me. And often that just gets carried along and then can come out in our relationships as an adult, okay? So when we have those big reactions and it's like, oh, Johnny just dropped milk, and it's like, that can be an example of like having us at five years old triggered as an adult,
yeah,
current moment.
Yeah.
So if we do that work on ourselves and we actually create like a healthy mummy and a healthy daddy within ourselves, and we work with ourselves on the timeline, reparenting the inner child, we can actually, I really feel like we can get to a really secure place within ourselves. And to be honest, I feel like I wish someone had told me about this work so long ago, but that was the most important work I've ever done with myself, ever. And I just, like, I cannot like reflect that to people enough.
That is beautifully said, and I love how you did all those gestures and kind of like showing us visually. And I never thought about kind of almost like raising my inner child. I've never thought about it that way. I've kind of always thought like what's in the past is in the past, and like she was a little miserable little girl, let's leave her behind. But I guess I do have to like reach in there and be like, hey, baby Marie, it's okay, you know, kind of. Yeah.
The most important work you ever do, Marie. And it's like, as much as, you know, I know a lot of individuals have this sort of like mentality of like, if it's in the past, just leave it there. And it's like, well, actually, that's a really, like, I wish we could just say that and it could be true. But really, you know, if you think about your current life and how many times, you know, you could just be in a situation, whether it's an individual not being able to leave the house, whether someone's just lashed out on their partner, whether it's just like, get away from me or whatever it is, this is all from inner child. So as much as you want, we can go, oh, just leave it in the past. But the past will always haunt us, per se, unless that younger version of us actually gets its needs met within relationship with us. In order to create fulfillment with us, with ourselves, then we're able to have an actual healthy relationship with someone else.
That's beautifully said, and I can't wait to coddle my inner child, which sounds really weird, but it's kind of adorable.
Yeah, let's give our inner children
thank you so much for answering my questions. And now, sorry.
Can I say one book?
Yes, of course, please.
Okay, so those were just like, there's several books of inner child, also reparenting. But then one book that I found, which sort of brings both inner child and reparenting into it, and I found really helpful, is called Daring to Trust.
Daring to Trust. Yeah. Who's it by?
I don't know. I just don't.
I'll look it up. We'll link in the show notes. It'll be fine.
Yeah, it's basically about like if you, you know, want to relate, you know, you want to have a trusting relationship, it's actually all about trust with yourself first. You know, so an example of that could be like, let's say someone's been cheated on and they're like, oh my God, I don't want to get in another relationship because they could cheat. It's like, oh, this is profound. Wait for this. It's like, don't worry about trusting people outside yourself. If you just trust yourself that if someone does that, you can take yourself away. That's all that matters. So what we do in that moment is we re-empower ourselves that like, oh, if someone does something that is not healthy to me, I can just leave. And it's the autonomy of decision-making.
Oh, yeah. I kind of understand what that means because I often find myself not daring to leave a relationship, be it like romantic or platonic relationship where I feel like I'm not being valued. Because it's between two things, really. It's between like trusting myself, but also like feeling empathetic for someone else's situation of being like, well, they are probably going through something right now and being understanding of that, but also kind of having to know that my decision would benefit me, if that makes sense. Anyway, that sounds like a really good book to read, and we'll link it in the show notes.
Well, Marie, what I'm hearing from you is that you're just talking about like, and I think that this is really important. This is really important in relationship satisfaction, actually. Choosing the right people to be in relationship with, that's a pretty important piece.
That is something. Yeah.
So looking for things like, you know, as you're talking about, like people that value you. You know, does this person actually care for me? Is this person actually connected to their heart? If I bring something to this person because I'm upset with the way that they've treated me, do they care that I'm upset and are they willing to listen? You know, this is like one of the second most important piece after self-work, but choosing the right people to be in relationship with.
Thank you so much for pointing that out. That does sound really important. And thank you so much for answering all my questions. You explained things so well. Now we're moving on to the open mic section. And this is your chance to talk about anything that you're passionate about. And it doesn't have to be related to the topic at all. So take it away. The floor is yours.
Thanks, Marie. So as I said at the very start of the podcast, I was talking about my passion for writing and just like exploring different topics. And yeah, I feel like I would like to talk about a topic because that's what I've been doing lately. Yeah. So recently I had a couple of situations occur and it brought my attention to those situations, and it was to do with just the way that some females are within our society. And I feel that at the moment and for a bit of time, men have been getting like a super hard rap, like around like toxic masculinity. And I feel that there's not been a lot on toxic femininity.
Mm-hmm.
And so recently I've been exploring toxic femininity, and it's so like, yeah, it's just, I've just been witnessing like just everywhere, just looking at it, and it's just so bizarre. It's, did you want me to share a little bit about like the story or something?
Yes, please. Firstly, tell us a bit about toxic femininity and what you've observed for yourself.
Okay. So toxic femininity is around things like, it can be like self-objectification. It's generally a lot more passive, right? So it's a lot more like subtle.
Mm-hmm.
So it could be like, let's say like the mean girls at school and they just won't look at you, or, you know, something like this. So it's not, I feel like it's not spoken about a lot. And I feel at times, you know, I've worked with different male clients where they've been at the end of a relationship and totally messed up, but had no idea why. And as we've like sifted through their history, we've become aware of like a lot of like subtle manipulations and like toxicity from the female. And yeah, it's just been so like eye-opening to have the awareness of those patterns within our society.
Yeah. I think I do relate to what you're talking about, but I do want to hear a bit about what you're personally working on that's related to toxic femininity.
Okay, so I've been working on like understanding it in a lot more depth. Mm-hmm. And also becoming aware of the feeling of it within our society. And I feel across my own timeline that I've had like quite a few examples where a perfect example would be, okay, so we're anchoring into the inner child again, okay? So an example could be like, because I'm very like playful and very open, I grew up with four brothers. I connect with guys really well. Okay, so a lot of girls will initially sort of, in the past when I was younger, would be my friend, and then something would happen when all of a sudden they would just turn. But as a little girl, I didn't really understand what was going on. So as I've grown older, I started to like sort of understand those things that were happening, because I've been doing a lot of inner child work, and I do a lot of inner child work with my clients. I've been understanding, you know, these patterns of, you know, whether women go through an insecurity and it's because their inner child wasn't loved a lot growing up. So that could come out and present as something like a jealousy, or, you know, a woman being like passive aggressive to gain control.
Mm-hmm.
So that could be something like just ignoring someone or not talking to them anymore. Or it could be something like, you know, being two-faced. So mm-hmm. being really nice to your face, but then behind your back doing something different. So yeah, I just have been working on just understanding those patterns within our society, and also around, back to the inner child again, but things like self-objectification and, you know, this may be complex, but an example could be like a woman objectifying herself in a certain way, and maybe like blaming like the men.
Mm-hmm.
She's already objectified. Oh, yeah.
It's kind of like weaponizing it a bit.
Yes, that.
Mm-hmm.
So I've just been, yeah, I'm really interested in that topic at the moment. And just also like, as I said to you earlier, but like with helping men rebuild themselves, you know, after a relationship breakdown, and, you know, if they've been in a passive aggressive relationship, which they weren't aware of, you know, helping them understand those little like cues in behavior and those behavioral patterns so that they can choose better for themselves the next time.
Mm-hmm.
And also I feel that when an individual educates themselves around these things, whether it's like passive aggression or manipulation or coercion, it actually is really empowering for an individual that has experienced that to be able to like detect that and feel that in another person and to go, oh, that's, I'm not doing that pattern again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so anyways, that's a topic that I've been exploring at the moment. That's been, yeah, really, really cool to explore. And I've actually been speaking with a lot of guys,
mm-hmm.
understand their experiences of toxic femininity.
Yeah, because it is equally as valid as what women go through with men. And sometimes men generally don't understand when women are being passive aggressive, and then women are like, but how could you not understand? Like, I, like, it's so obvious, like, you should have known, that kind of thing. And it's a whole discussion to be had. So it sounds like a really interesting personal project that you've got going on, and thank you so much for sharing that with us. To end things off, if our listeners want to find out more about you and what you do, where can they go?
Yeah, well, I have a psychology business, like my practice, and it's called Nectar Psychology, which is N-E-K-T-A-R psychology, and that means overcoming the fear of death So, yeah.
That's beautiful. Nectar Psychology, we'll link it in the show notes. Thank you so much, Brooke, for joining us today. And thank you, everyone, for tuning in. We'll catch you in the next episode.
Thank you so much, Marie. I really appreciate the time that we've spent together today. And lots of warmth and lots of love to everyone on their journeys.
Likewise.
You've been listening to Reloscope, the Relationship Science Insights podcast produced by LMSL, the Life Management Science Labs. For more episodes like this from 10 different life management perspectives, search LMSL on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts, so you can get updated on everything we have to offer. We have a wide range of topics readily available for you to check out. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider rating our show, sharing it, and subscribing to our channel, as it helps us grow and bring you more quality resources. More of our work can be found on our website at re.lmsl.net, where you can join our movement. I'm Marie Stella. Thanks for tuning in.